you look at things like Confucius and some of those Eastern philosophers and stuff like that. That was so much that is passed down to them. And then so much of the history we have is because
check, baby. Check, baby.
Hey, we're live.
Hey, what's going on, buddy?
We're back after Thanksgiving. Welcome to another episode of the Joe and Doug Show. We're pumped to be with you. We have coffee in hand because it's been snowing here in Youngstown. And I'm wearing a hat, Joe.
I don't wear
hats all that often, but the hair was not did today. So hats what you get.
Okay. I'm down with it.
Now you're shaving your beard off because no shave November.
I got a 50-50 split where
I think it looks great.
You do?
Distinguished, bro.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm okay. It's uncomfortable. So I definitely have to like trim it back if I'm going to keep it. Cause it's getting a little bit unwildly. People are handing me money when I'm walking down the street.
Yeah. You got a couple of nice like gray patches there.
Blonde. Those are blonde.
Blonde. Sorry. Blonde. Yeah. Right. Well, some guys, when they start losing it up here, they grow it out down here, and that's, no, you have a good shaped head, and then your beard looks good.
Dude, that's awesome. You know? Thank you. You just made my day.
Yeah. Some people don't look good bald. They just don't have a good shape.
Do you tell them though? Or are you like, dude, your eggs and your head's
no, I tell my wife behind them. No, it's it's one of those things. I've always told my wife that I told Sam, you know, if I start going gray or bald, like I don't plan to diet and I don't plan to, you know, get Rogaine or whatever. Like it's just gonna go and we're gonna shave it and we're just gonna go on with life. Maybe that's a bad idea for me. Maybe I'll look like Uncle Fester or something like that. You know, I don't know.
Something to play with. But I decided like in high school, our basketball team went to state and everybody shaved their head. And I kind of liked it. I like standing out. I like being a little different.
Okay.
I'm a little bit of a rebellious spirit. So I pierced my ears a bunch of times and got a bunch of tattoos. And
I was too scared of my dad.
Really? He didn't mean to murder you?
Yeah, I was terrified that he was going to like pull my earrings out with pliers if I ever got my ears pierced or whatever. So you have a tattoo?
I do.
Where?
Right, just on the arm.
Oh, what is it?
It's an
iguana. I've never seen your tattoo.
Yeah.
And we've been swimming together, but you wore a shirt.
I do.
Yeah. It's an iguana?
It's an iguana.
And what does it stand for? When did you get it?
So like I knew that I was going to be in the reptile industry when I was a kid, breeding reptiles and raising them and whatever. And I knew a part of my income was going to come from reptiles. And it's just been the first thing that I started that was my first real enterprise.
Huh. That's cool.
Everybody's got a story on their tattoos.
Absolutely. You have to ask. One of the few times I've connected with an iguana in a deep and visceral way was on my honeymoon. We had this guy that we nicknamed Henry that would come visit us by the lagoon, and we would order extra French fries and we'd feed him French fries and he would come back and visit us. I don't think they liked us feeding them French fries, but he was huge. I mean,
did he eat the French fries?
Oh yeah. Woof him down.
He liked the French fries.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
I mean,
like a potato, I guess.
I mean, at the resort, I mean, they were kind of like cats. I mean, they were just there and chuck the French fry.
All right.
I would get extra bread too, because in the lagoon, I don't know what they were. They're probably carp of some kind, but I called them Mexican goldfish. And there were these huge fish, and I'd go out in the middle of the water and I'd break up the bread and they'd all swim all around me. It was a ton of fun.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it was cool. Honeymoon memories there.
Yeah.
So
what are you talking about?
Thanksgiving was good for you?
It was yes and no. I kind of do the introspective thing and I was facing down some demons again. This is like the third vacation in a row where I come back and say, instead of like checking out and just relaxing, I come back and like, hey, I went on a trip of some kind and faced myself, you know?
Well, I saw your Facebook and in my head, I was like, well, Joe's either going to climb on the couch and I'm going to console him today.
Yeah.
Or we'll have to dive into, a new topic for, the holiday season. So is Joe climbing on the couch or are we going with a new topic?
Let's go on to a new topic because I think this thing has played out. I'm out of the funk a little bit. I'm watching it go in the rearview mirror now. So,
and so you guys were on the beach. You had turkey, you had stuffing,
mashed potatoes, the whole thing, deal. Yep.
Beautiful. We did too. My brothers ran. It was a lot of fun. It was wild having all those kids in my house, or eight of them and seven boys. Nine and under, eight and under.
Mm.
So, yeah, it was wild.
I bet you the volume was real low.
Yeah, it was very low.
Tiny low.
So at one point, my youngest brother and his wife went down into the basement with, I think, one of their kids. And all of the older kids were upstairs. They went down with the baby. And my wife is like, we're sitting there talking or whatever. And I go, watch this. And I get up and I go into the other room because they just told the kids no more Smash Bros, no more Nintendo Switch. And so the kids were going bananas upstairs. And so I go, guys, Dan is what we call him. Uncle Dan wants to play ping pong in the basement. all the kids, ping pong. They all run downstairs. I sit next to my wife. You hear that? Nice and quiet up here. She goes, "You're so mean. You and your brother should go downstairs." We waited about 30 minutes for him to come up and ask for help. And then we went down and he came up. And yeah, it was the kids had a blast. They all play well together. And it's always fun just to have family around. It centers you. It's one of those things that, you know, you meet people at different phases in life. And so they know you through that lens, right? Like people who meet me now know me through the lens of Bridge of Hope, or they know me through my kids, or they know me through Sam. My brothers have known me my entire life. Right. And so there are stories that they could tell that could end me, you know, right. And there's stories they could tell that we all laugh about. Right. And, you know, we got into a few of those stories around the table, and it's always fun to, you know, you get into history with people. And I find it so fascinating because you'll meet people in a certain season and you can't believe they were a different person another season. They're always that person, eternally that person to you. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like, you know, you meet your teacher in school and you go through school and then you graduate from school and then you run into them at like a social event and you realize, well, we're only like 5 or 8 years apart and you're at this social event and it's like, this is kind of weird. I'm hanging out. Like they're eternally Mr. or Mrs. whatever. Right. And to see them in a different light is tough. And it's the same thing, you know, for me now, the majority of people that I've met in the last decade, they know me through the lens of pastor or as a dad to my kids or whatever. They have a particular lens that they've seen me through. And to have somebody like my brothers who know me as a knucklehead and, you know, and know the childhood stuff and know all of that. So we sat around the table one night and all of a sudden, I don't know how it started, but it was like, "You remember when?" And then I'm like, "Well, if you're telling that story, I'm about to tell this story. Your wife is about to hear this story." And I think it started with me and my brother Don, and we were, you know, just stories of beating the crap out of each other, just like for fun, like total brother stuff, not malicious or anything like that. Because we were talking about having all the kids and they're wrestling and running around. I'm like, "Oh my goodness!" Like, takes me back. Like, my mom must have been a nervous wreck. Like every time we'd go out. So we had this field across the street from us where we'd go and we'd play baseball or we'd play football or soccer or whatever. And I started telling the story, or Don goes, "Yeah, remember that time we were playing football and you shoved me into the big tree like full speed?" And I was like, "Oh yeah." I was like, "I remember that." I was like, "Remember that time he was pitching to me in baseball and he pegged me on purpose. I mean, drilled me, and he took off running and I picked the ball up and I hit it with the bat and clocked him in the side of the head." Nice. And so we're going back and forth telling the war story and we're watching, you know, our wives are like, "I've never heard that one. I've never heard that one." But you start getting into that space and there's something comforting about not only can we tell the stories that could not necessarily end each other, but those stories that nobody else knows. But there's a piece about it because not only can I tell those stories, but I'd roll up and kill somebody for you. Like, that's my brother. You know, we would, you know, if you show, there's that one scene, I forget what movie, I've seen the gif of it or whatever, where he's like, you know, "Listen, you know, we're going to have to roll up and hurt some people. You can never ask me about it again." And the guy responds, "Whose car are we taking?" And it, you know, it's that kind of relationship where like, they know where the bodies are buried. They know the things that, you know, the good things I did and the bad things I did. And they know who I was without all the facade or titles or education or persona. They know me in my rawest form before any of this stuff had been forged. And to sit around and be able to tell those stories and know that even in the midst of that, they're the ones that will judge me least. And I know that's not true for every family, but my brothers happen to be pretty awesome and we get along pretty well. So it was just, that was super refreshing that Friday, sitting around telling stories and just being in an element where it was like, I don't need any armor. Like, I don't have to be anything other than just, I can be in this space. And I can be that way with certain people, but not everybody. Because, you know, you can let down people when you're not who they anticipate you to be. I'm sure you've experienced that. And so I love that part of the holiday. That was really refreshing for me. And in some ways, it's very introspective because they told a few stories I had forgotten about. And I was like, "Oh, that was hilarious. You know, I was an idiot. You know, right. How did I survive? Thank God we didn't have Facebook, you know."
Right.
Look back at those things. And, you know, if we had Facebook, Joe, I'm not sure I'd be a pastor. And I'm not sure, you know, you think about those things like, you know, when I was 13 or 14, the things that I said or did or places I'm like, And I was a good kid. Because of my buddies, like, they wouldn't have gotten to college. They, you know, it's wild.
Yeah, and that might be a phenomenon in the future that, you know, might not be a gift for our kids and, yeah, and whatever. Yeah. Because, number one, that families are splintered and they don't hang out and your cousins aren't your first best friends and it's not tight is. And number two, that there's such a defensive proposition with people knowing your business where when you get outed on social media, it's usually not a pleasant thing.
Yeah.
Now, early on, I kind of knew that in the future, if, you know, they ever dug up dirt on me, I want to have told the story already once.
Absolutely.
So that if they...
It's disarming.
Exactly.
Let me take the bullets out of the gun for you. Exactly. I'll hand you the gun, but it doesn't have any ammo.
Right. But if I didn't do that, then I'd be petrified at this point that I build a company and one little story could unseat
me. Oh, yeah. And it doesn't even have to be true anymore.
Right.
That's the crazy thing. It's all about narrative at this point. And, you know, it's a scary part of our culture. But yeah, I mean, that was a bunch of fun. And I think much like you know, you said you had a bit of an introspective time coming out of this funk a little bit, figuring some things out. It was really nice. Like my brother and I took a walk in the snow for like an hour. It was just the two of us. We left our wives and kids and we were like, nice. Deuces, we're gone.
Very cool.
And, you know, he got to talk about his kids and got to talk about his job and, you know, what he's hoping to do. And it was just fun to listen and encourage and, you know, catch up. Cause we don't, you know, we make the occasional phone call like, hey, Charlotte's got this going on or Graham's got this going on or, you know, what are you doing today? Oh, well, I'm taking care of this order. Yeah. I got an appointment here, whatever. You know, we do the small talk via over the phone, but it was just nice to be in the same space for 5 days. And, I don't know, there's something refreshing about, the people that know you best.
All right. So give me your insight on this. For the last three trips that I went away, I got some quiet where the phone wasn't ringing and whatever. Yeah. And it's not that I checked into the Let's Go Relax Boulevard, right? My brain was like, oh, we got some quiet. Let's do this. Yeah. Let's figure out purpose. Let's go existential. Yeah. Let's, you know, whatever. And my life is kind of complicated. So when that stuff rushes down on me, like, am I doing the proper thing by your advantage?
Yeah.
So, advantage.
Well, so I think where I go with anybody in that space, you have kind of three areas, right? You have what you do, which you spin a lot of plates, you have a lot of tasks, you have a lot of balls in the air. And some of that does add definition, and some of that comes from a place of definition. So it's a both and. I don't think tasks are bad, but tasks reveal. You know, the whole word belief, you know, we talk a lot about faith. In the Hebrew actually comes with the connotation of works. So in other words, you can tell me you mentally ascribe, I believe I'm going to do this, but you don't actually believe it until you're doing it. And so we've kind of separated that in the West. I can believe something, but it doesn't have to impact my life. So tasks are important, but a lot of people get caught up in the tasks, particularly as guys, we value the doing. You and I are both doers. And so that's very high up on our list. And so we value the doing. We draw a lot of edification from the stuff that we do. We draw a lot of value and purpose from what we do. But sometimes that conceals who we actually are. And I think probably the reason that Joe runs to the internal space when he gets some quiet is because you're so busy doing that you don't normally get a chance to process that. So when you put away all the tasks, which are important, and you just have time to sit and think, it's like, well, does any of this crap matter? And then you start getting into and hashing out, well, you know, I made a big deal of this or that employee or, you know, and then you start going into and playing the head game for yourself. And some of that is healthy. And then some of that is, well, I can't change it, but I don't want to repeat it. So how do I navigate that? And so you have the task area. You have the very introspective internal Joe that Joe wakes up and looks at in the mirror. And then you have the self-image that everybody else sees, the reputation, the persona. And those three are often, when they get into alignment, it's over. Like, you're going to crush things. When they're competing with one another, it's when people have problems. So when people are doing tasks that don't line up with their public image and don't satisfy their purpose, like somebody that goes to a meaningless job, punches in, punches out, they hate their job, they have the midlife crisis, they buy the Corvette, you know, all that sort of stuff to kind of overcome because they're not satisfied. They're doing things, they're making money, they're maybe even mildly successful. But they're not satisfied with the internal workings. And so it's getting the three aligned to me that's important. So the tasks that we do are great. The way I eliminate tasks is those things that don't align with my internal purpose. It makes it very easy for me to go, well, yes, I'll do this. And no, I won't do that. Because if it's aligned with my inner purpose, then it makes it like there's passion behind it. There's that sort of stuff. Or if I say I had a couple opportunities to do some things where I'm like, yeah, I'll do that. And then I'm like, I was being too nice. Like, yeah, I'm going to do it, but it's a have to, not a get to.
Right.
And you know that feeling and that difference. And so I think honestly, you know, for you, when you go away, because doing is such a high priority on your list, you've had so much success with that. And I wouldn't say you're necessarily out of alignment, but your internal workings are going, all right, we've said yes to a lot of things, right? I mean, you said 24 things on the, so it's a lot. Is it too much? No, Joe can handle it. Is it? So you start going into that place, and I think
you want to hear the most frustrating part of the message, and see if you can do your professional interpretation of this. The message that I got is that my real purpose, I have not even started working on.
I would agree with that.
And I'm 100%. Like, I got 24 things. You're telling me that not one of those things is even a little bit connected. Even like strategy isn't built in there somewhere.
Yeah.
That's frustrating to a guy like me.
but here it is. It is. It's just concealed. So there's a scripture that I love. You can hit your button.
Yes.
The Bible says that it's the glory of God to conceal a matter, and it's the glory of man to reveal it and to seek it out. And so a lot of us want everything handed to us. I want to know this fits my purpose. And so for a lot of us, that stuff is kept concealed so that we keep coming back and we keep trying. And each of those tasks and each of those 24 things, there's a sliver, there's a piece, but they're not. You know, when you get to something that's 90% your purpose, 85% your purpose, I mean, that's amazing to do. When you're doing stuff that's like, well, that's got 20% of it. I really love this part of it, right? I'm sure you've said that about certain tasks. You know, you start looking at those things and going, all right, how do I just do that 20% that I love? And it's not that simple, but you start to reveal more and more. Some of it too, as you get older, things start to become obvious to you. You know, there were things as a young pastor that I thought I'd like that now, you know, talking be 37 in February. I've been preaching since I was 18, 19 years old. So almost 20 years. I'm going, I really don't like that. I really like that. People tell me I'm really good at this. And so how do I do more of that stuff that brings joy, satisfaction, significance to me, that makes me feel, not like anybody can do this, but only I do it well, and I do it that way. Not that I'm the only one that does it, but you understand there's certain things that Joe does that nobody else quite does like Joe. And so how do I do more of that? And how do I find the joy space with that is huge. So yeah, I feel that way myself. Like, I feel like I've figured out pieces of my purpose, but it's always being revealed because it's an infinite thing.
Right. Now I got a question for like the last three of these shows that it's been a therapist session with you. Am I going to get a bill at the end of this? Is that to derail your thing? Go ahead. What did you really want to talk about during?
No. I honestly, this morning we had staff meeting. We spent an hour in prayer, and I thought about the show tonight. And I was like, and then I glanced at Facebook, saw a couple of your posts, and I was like, I wonder if Joe's just going to want to talk about Joe tonight. So literally, that's what I came in with, thinking that maybe you'd want to go in that direction. And we could certainly, we can deviate off on purpose. We can deviate off on a few of these things. Most people do well in the task department because they have to. I have to pay the bills. I have to take care of the kids. Yeah. I have to pay the house. So I have to do something, but the tasks are unfulfilling. So everybody hates their jobs, looking for something else, TGIF. They can't wait for Friday. There's the wrong motivation because the tasks don't align and don't bring me significance. They don't bring me any value. I don't feel them. And so evaluating the task is fine. But it's not the task that's the problem. It's the purpose. Because when I shift the purpose, all of a sudden tasks are different. I'll give you a great example. So my wife and kids and I reset all 500 chairs at church. That's a lot of work. A lot of chairs. My kids counted out envelopes, counted out the pens, made sure everything was just where they wanted. I had the measuring tape, made sure everything got right. Now, I could have recruited some volunteers and I could have delegated it, but I wanted to do it. And this is the shift for me. So I remember as a young pastor, they were like, you need to clean the sanctuary and set up the chairs. I was like, okay, Easter's coming. We got to fit X amount of chairs in here. So I took all the chairs down, vacuumed, set the chairs up. I grumbled and complained all week long. It took me 25 hours. I was miserable doing it. And I had a pastor that came along and came in and helped me for a little bit. And he noticed my attitude because it was a task. And he shifted it with just a little perspective. He goes, you know, each of these chairs you're putting up is not just a chair. This is going to sound a little corny, but it helped. He's like, these are destiny positioners. Because people are going to come and sit in here and their destinies are going to be altered forever. So instead of whining about the chairs, why don't you pray for each chair you're putting down, because it represents a person that's going to sit here. They're going to hear a message they never heard before. And I was like, well, that changes the way I do chairs. It's a little cheesy. It's a little corny, but I love doing chairs to this day, because when I set the chairs, I'm thinking about the atmosphere in the room and the people that are going to sit in those chairs. It's not just about getting the chairs just right. It's not about, well, you know, I want to have the rows. It's literally, I know that I'm touching each chair. I may not get to meet every person that comes in, but I can set the chairs. That's a small thing, but there are a lot of tasks that you end up having to do that you probably hate. With just a slight tweak of purpose, all of a sudden it's like, okay, yeah, that does suck, but you know what? This is really valuable because I've now aligned it with my purpose. My purpose has always been people. So I take everything that I do, and I find the more I align it with people, the better I do at it. When I go to the gym with somebody, I do better for myself because I'm not there to work out. I'm there to be with the person. So I've aligned it with my purpose. I very rarely do anything by myself. Bring somebody with me. One, because I'd end up talking to the wall. And two, my purpose is people. So, you know, if I have to go, even today we had to set up some chairs and tables for the leadership Christmas party. And Lijo was there and Pastor Mike and others. And I was like, hey, if anybody can help me, I'm going to go set up tables and chairs. Now everybody could have had stuff to do. They could have went and done that. There's 32 chairs and four tables. This was going to take me all of 20 minutes. But if I get a couple people to help me, guess what? I can schmooze while I'm doing it. I can talk. I can make an investment. And so for me, the value in me being there wasn't that the tables and chairs got set up. That was going to get set up regardless. Lijo probably would have done it by himself. But I was there with people, which makes it inherently valuable. In the same way, you know, when I look at, you know, podcast and or even TV for that matter. So TCT invites me to be on TV. That's okay. I'm not there to be on the TV show. I'm there because I love connecting with the other pastors. I'm there to meet new people. I'm there to connect with the host. I'm there to connect with people at the TV studio, because that, for me, is the value and significance in my life, is that I'm going to leave some sort of mark on them. And I happen to get to do TV while I do it. So everything in my life, for me, stems back to people. And that's just the way God's wired me.
When on my Google Maps, if I want to go to the gym, it gives me this little chart that say where there's least likely that anybody's going to be there. And that's the time that I pick. I love pulling weeds out in my front yard because nobody else is there and I can just go off into my own little wonderland. Right. So that chair thing, if it were just me, that would have been pleasure paradise.
Yeah, I hated
for
it.
Me.
So I'll tell you a funny story. So we were at Charlotte's concert last night. And, you know, you come in, hundreds of other parents are coming in and all the kids, and they're, you know, going to sing Jingle Bells and, you know, whatever. And I've been to concerts myself when I was in school. And then the last church where I was a youth pastor, when we built our new facility, we were right next door to the middle school, and they had no heat or no air conditioning in the gym. So their spring concert was like a billion degrees. So they would use our worship center and we would run all the audio visual and stuff like that for them. So I got to sit through a lot of Christmas and spring concerts, that weren't my kids, but this was Charlotte. She was pumped. Nice. And so it was great. She got to be with her friends. And so we get there and we come in, I get to sit down, and Graham is sitting next to me. Now Graham is wired a lot like me, and every room that I walk into, I do it very subconsciously. I'm scanning the room for people that I know, even people that I might remotely know or people that I've met one time, so that I can go up and say hello and meet some people. And my wife knows this and she dreads every moment of it. Mm-hmm. And I meet people everywhere that I know. I think one of my teachers from like elementary school was on our plane going to our honeymoon. My wife was like, are you serious? You know somebody on the plane? I'm like, I know people everywhere. Graham is scanning the crowd and Sam's like, what are you doing? We sit down, he's facing the back watching people coming, because we were about in like the, I don't know, the fifth or sixth row. And so he's looking and watching. He goes, oh, there's my friend Brewer. Hey, hey, what's going on? There's my other buddy. She's like, what are you doing? He's like, I'm looking for all my friends. He's like, can I go over and talk to them? Can I go over and talk to them? And he's literally doing what I do subconsciously when I go into a room looking for it. It was super cool. And my wife just looked at me and she goes, he is totally your son. Meanwhile, Benjamin is sitting next to her and one of his friends is literally in the row in front. And I was like, hey, Ben, hey, Ben. And he's just like, please don't talk to me, please don't look at me. And I'm like, well, you have two different kids. But my wiring is for people. I love all kinds of shapes and sizes and needs.
See, this is why we get along so well. We really
no
do.
Yeah, and my whole thing though is like that doesn't have to be Joe's purpose. It just happens to be mine,
right?
And I know that when I pair things up with that purpose, it makes it significantly more valuable for me, and it goes from a have to a get to. So, you know, I joined Rotary when I was in New Jersey. Why? Not because I needed an extra thing to serve at. We did tons of serving at church and missions work and passed out. Like our church did a lot of the same stuff. Rotary partnered with the church and a whole bunch. We gave away turkeys and we did all sorts of stuff with the Rotary Club. But Pastor Jim, who was our executive pastor, loved Rotary. He said, do you want to go to lunch with me? I said, sure. And we went to Rotary. And the next thing I knew, I had a whole bunch of friends that were at Rotary that were all much, much older than I was. And you just spoke at Rotary, right?
I did, yeah.
How was that?
It was great.
Yeah? So, but I joined Rotary because Pastor Jim invited me, and it was all about the people. And then I stayed and stuck around because people were pretty nice, and they were coming to our church to do things, and we were serving together at various events. And but again, you take those people out of the equation. I didn't need another thing to go to. But people for me are the driving force behind all this sort of stuff. So how was Rotary here in Boardman? I've been once or twice.
So Debbie Liptak invited me. She's in another group that I am. And she thought it'd be, she follows all of my adventures on Facebook. And she
nice.
Thought it'd be interesting to tell some of the more outlandish things that I do.
You talked about ghost hunting?
No, I didn't. No, but that was on the list. But they wanted to know about magnet fishing and my RV travels and
nice.
You know, non-typical stuff. But I went into good, you know, the messaging was that we're doing the pay it forward boxes again.
Love it.
And Rotary was a big supporter of it. They've given a bunch of stuff. And then this group that Debbie's part of as well. So she wanted me to tell that story and inspire people. And, you know, one of the things that I spent a good bit of time on is doing something that's a little bit counterintuitive. You know, we live in Youngstown, right? We believe in the city. We want, you know, we want to be a comeback tale. We want to talk about ourselves well, and we want to be a success, right? Which means that everybody's property is going to go up. Everybody's wages are going to go up. Prices are going to go up. Taxes are going to go up. We're going to be a successful city.
Yep.
So not all the luxuries that we have by having the low costs are going to change. So when I say, hey, you know what, in order for kids to stay in this town, we got to be able to be willing to spend a little bit more money than we do on shopping local and supporting the professionals that stay in town. And I kind of watched faces like, loved it.
Yeah. I've obviously identified a big chunk of my purpose, and I don't think people are my only purpose, but I think it's a large portion of what I'm designed to do. You said you haven't even stepped into your purpose, but if you were to ask yourself, how would you define your purpose?
See, that's a big one because like, I feel like I'm an innovator and an inventor that has not even begun on the project yet. And I don't know if it's going to be in physics. I don't know if it's going to be time travel. I don't know if it's going to be a physical thing. I really don't know. Yeah. And so I think like my challenge is getting involved in all of those things to see what starts ticking. If the tumblers start falling in line, then I know that I'm on the right path, but I don't have a clue as to what direction to go off. And it's exciting that I get to go try all kind of new things.
Well, and I think those paths, those different directions, all that stuff will forge a path forward, but ultimately it'll all come from the same spot. Cause I personally believe that 95% of our gifts, talents, abilities, purpose, all of that is in us at birth. And life is about us revealing those things. Some people build walls up and hide those things and conceal them, but it's literally about just letting who you are out.
If you were to just take a chunk and say, like, what's that purpose down Joe's road? What would you say it is? Give me the ball. Just take that. What's that? Crystal ball. That
crystal ball. Up? Yeah. I don't do crystal balls, Joe.
Dang.
gonna get me to lose my credential card talking about crystal balls on.
I got bones.
Oh boy. Check, please, waiter. No, no, in all seriousness, I think the two most powerful things that I've seen in you, just observation, is your ability to be able to pull the best out of others. So you see opportunity and risk and all that sort of stuff in a way. Some people have it in them, but you're the one standing there going, jump, and you hit them on the back, or maybe you kick them off the ledge or whatever. Okay. But for me, one of the things I know that you've done for me personally, and I've watched you do it for a few others in my sphere, is you're able to kind of come alongside and be the one who makes faith risk normal for people. And you bring a security and a safety to that place where most people are freaked out by it. I mean, and you know this because you've interacted with people, but your way to kind of dispel the, not that it can't go wrong, but it's okay if it does. And getting people into that spot where they're willing to be like, yeah, you know what? I should start that company. I should quit my job. I should step out and try this, or I should try podcasting for the first time, or I should, like, those things. And so in that way, I think your purpose is actually more aligned with people than you would like.
I knew you were going to say that.
Than you would like. And I think that goes into your desire to want to do some speaking, and all of that is about what? It's about pushing people over that finish line when they can't push themselves. The thing that you love to do, a lot of other people love to talk about. And so you find those people that are loving to talk about it, and they're dabbling with doing it, and you go, watch, I'll jump in the deep end. I'll flip first. Watch, let me show you. I did this and it worked for me. Now here, come here, get up here. Shove them in. See, it wasn't that bad. Yeah, the water's a little cold, but we'll be okay. Come here, let me pull you out and let's do it again. And I think that is a superpower of yours, because people are disarmed around you because you have the currency of saying, hey, I've done that and I failed, and I've done that and I've succeeded, and I've had more successes than I've had failures because I've done this and this. And so just jump in with me. It's going to be fun. And the people that are attracted to that space with you may not always be ready to jump in, but you're going to be you're kind of the safe space for them, if you will.
So I did this thing with Ryan the other day. We went to Hocking Hills and we were climbing on all the big boulders and rocks. And I really don't have any fears when it comes to climbing things, but there was this one spot there was probably like a 4-foot gap between two rocks. Mm-hmm. And everybody that does this is just jumping across like the little gazelles, and Ryan and I are on one side, and Ryan's looking at me like, you know, I'm afraid, right? I'm scared that I'm going to jump. Yeah. And in my head, I'm like, I am too.
Like, don't tell him. Yeah, don't look scared.
That. He was like, I was like, do you want me to go first? And I was like, please say that we want to go down the other way. Please say it. And he was like, no, yeah, let's go. So I was like, okay, I'm going to jump. And what if I fall? And I'm like, so what? I fall on the leaves and I'm probably not dead. I might get hurt a little bit, but he's watching me. So I got to make some kind of decision. Yeah. So I was like, I jumped like, oh, that was easy. But how do I tell him that I just like, it organized the chaos in like 10 seconds, didn't give myself too much time to think about it, or else I probably wouldn't have. And I, you know, weighed the risks and made the jump, and I was like, yeah, it's good. Come on. You know, he didn't do it, but still.
Yeah. Wait, I think some of those things are caught and not taught. So like, you can sit in a class and put a thing up on a screen and be like, well, here's the 5 steps of risk or faith, and this is what you're going to do. But it's another thing. If you would have grabbed Ryan's hand and be like, all right, we're going to do it together, probably would have done it. I don't know if you've seen it was an Instagram story. He got a bunch of crap for it. But Tom Brady had his kids on top of this like 20-foot waterfall. And I don't know if his 8 or 10-year-old daughter is like petrified. So he just grabbed her hand and jumped and basically yanked her off the waterfall. Now she had a blast. Love and everybody's it. Like, I can't believe he pulled her out. You know, he's getting a bunch of hate in the comments because she obviously did not want to go in the beginning of the video. And he just was like, 1, 2, 3, and grabbed her hand and they went. And, but I remember looking at that. I'm like, that's what parenting is. That's what leadership is. It's, you know, sometimes it's going yourself. And then sometimes it's saying, hey, I know you're scared. Grab my hand. We're going to do this together. And, I think for me, that's definitely one of the things that I look at and go, oh, that's Joe's, you know, superpower is he unlocks that ability in others where they wouldn't do it on their own, but they get around and they're like, wow, built a studio from scratch, or wow, you know, he's had success here. They run into you at one of your other companies and then they're like, well, I have an idea I haven't told anybody about. And then they want to come in and sell you gun oil or whatever else. You know, they come in and you're like,
Okay, well,
I'll take a shot on that.
Yeah.
And it gives people the confidence to step out and do some things they'd never do otherwise. The other thing that I think that I see you do quite a bit that I think is probably you appreciate this, but I think you undervalue it. You balance work and home at this point like a superstar, in the sense that so many business people that are spinning 24 plates are not getting in their RV for 4 days with their family, are not, you know, decorating for Halloween at a campground. You know what I mean? Like, right. Like the things that you're doing intentionally, the way that you and Ryan do stuff together, the way that you guys tackle things as a family, that doesn't happen in other families. You might think like, oh, you know, this is what, it's not what everybody does. And most people that are highly driven and highly successful, they work 100 hours, they come home, kids are already in bed, they, you know, kiss their wife goodnight and do more work. And you work hard, but you have distinctly said, hey, I'm going to pass things on to my family. And I actually think that's going to be more of what you talk about in your speaking and other stuff. I'm prophesying to you, you don't even realize it. So I actually think that's going to be more of what you talk about and more of what you do in these business things, because everybody can come in and talk about KPIs and they can talk about, well, this is important and these five values and whatever. What everybody sucks at is their family.
Yeah.
Everybody. I mean,
and I'll tell you, like, one of the things that naturally happens is when you find those successes in those areas, it's like holding back the pressure of water, because all of it wants to consume you and make you work 100 hours against your family. And if you're not serious about holding that thing up, it'll break you and say, I had to, you know, and you have good reason to bail on it.
Absolutely.
But I set up this rule, and I sort of, like, in my family and in my businesses, I took the role of insulator. So I'm allowed to create pain, but I have to insulate everyone around me from feeling that pain. If anybody's going to feel pain, it's going to be me first. After the pain is done, then I can hand it down to everyone else. So when I start a new business deal or idea, it happens at 3:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
My family doesn't feel the repercussions of it. I'm not taking time from them. They don't even know what's really happening until it's, you know, mature enough to float down into our regular life.
Yeah. No, and it's not just a time thing. Like, you're very intentional bringing Ryan to the studio and, hey, Ryan, you're going to do a show on video games or whatever it is that he loves. And you're here like, play with tens of thousands of dollars of equipment. I don't care if you break it. Like, I'm going to, like, this is my passion. I'm going to share it with you. The parts that you're excited about, I'm not going to force it in that space. But you and Debbie do such a great job with that. And I actually think that when you start stepping into some of these companies, the thing that they're going to love about you the most is not the faith talk. They're going to go, oh, that was really cool. They'll write that down. They'll tweet that one out. But it's going to be you talking about the RV trips and the stuff you talked about at Rotary, the goofy stuff that everybody
that I would have never even put on the list.
And that's the thing, they're going to go, you should have that guy come and talk, because he's going to bring a balance to your team. They're going to be happier when they work. They're going to bring a balance to the stuff that, that guy's going to come in and you're going to increase 2% in sales, but who cares? This guy's going to help you retain employees because they're happy at home. And that's a different,
I like it.
It's a different value. When I went to, 2015, 2014, maybe, I went to Dave Ramsey's Entree Leadership in Pittsburgh, and they had a lady that spoke, and the one line she said, they had a guy talking about $1 million of assets and how to become a millionaire. They had one guy talking about, you know, 10 things to lead your team. But I mean, they had good stuff. Like, I have my notebook somewhere. I wrote down a lot of stuff. The one thing that I remembered was the lady got up and she talked about family, and it wasn't even her whole talk. It was like a 15-minute intro. And she's like, look, I'm going to talk about this, but I think this is the most important thing you're going to walk away with. And for me, it was. I couldn't tell you anything else that was spoken that day. Dave Ramsey came out. He was all exciting. I don't know what he said. I don't even remember her name. But the one line she said was, when you're at work, your company demands that you are there 100%. They don't want you screwing around on Facebook. They don't want you, you know, talking on the phone to whoever. They want you 100% engaged in the work. And then you go home, and you are 50% engaged at home because you're still answering emails, you're answering calls at the office, you're doing all this stuff. Why should your family not get 100% at home? She asked that question, and I was like, She's like, if you can come and you can shut down and come into the office and work 100% at home when you go, or 100% at work when you go home,
check out.
Check out. put the phone down, put it away, turn the emails off. And she's like, you know, I hear people all the time that say, oh, well, I just check them in case it's an emergency. I just read them. She's like, if you have to give mental energy to it, you're going to give emotional energy to it. And while you're half talking to your kid, your brain's going to be thinking about, well, how do I reply to that email? What meeting do I have to have tomorrow to handle that or whatever it might be? She's like, shut it down. And I was like, it's hard to do because I'm the guy at 1 a.m. going, man, this is a really good sermon idea, which I don't mind because everybody's asleep. But to turn it off, even when I go on vacation, it's tough to turn it off. And I think it's one of the crossovers between entrepreneur and clergy. I often say to people, it's a unique job that I have. It's 24/7. Like I've counseled people like at 9:30 at night in the middle of the Cheerio aisle because, Pastor, I was meaning to talk to you and it's just God that brought us together here. And do you have 20 minutes for me? And I'm like, I'm in my pajamas. I'm here to get Cheerios because my kids want to eat tomorrow morning when they wake up. But you want 20 minutes of my time, you know, and I've learned to do this without apologizing. You should be like, you know what? I'm so sorry. I got to get home. I was all apologetic. And I had a mentor correct me on it. Was like, don't apologize. Your family's worth your time. And don't apologize for getting home to your kids. Or I was like, that's right. You know, like, but I was like, I felt like, oh, I'm so sorry. And, you know, could you call the office? Well, no, this will just take a minute. Right? Cause people are, and then I'm too nice. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times I'm standing there for 20 minutes going, yeah, you know, I'm sorry that you're going through that. Let me pray for you, whatever. And I've tried my best, to get away from that space because my family deserves my best too. But similar to entrepreneurs, you're going 24/7. Like there's nobody to tell you, hey, clock out. Like the idea doesn't clock out. Right. Like you don't drop your tools and go home. Like you're constantly in that state. And that's kind of what pastoral ministry is like, is you're on 24/7, whether they see me at the supermarket or whether somebody has a crisis at 11 o'clock at night, my phone rings. Like it, those things are different than just, If I went and worked on the line from 9 to 5 and I got to drop my tools at the end of the day, I get to go home and I pick the tools up tomorrow. If the building burns down, I don't care. If the company closes down, I go find another company to work for. But when you're in it in an entrepreneurial way, and same thing in pastoral ministry, it's 24/7 and it consumes because you're the driver. And so it's just different. And so you have to set those boundaries.
Here's my breaking point. Yeah. So this was late 90s, early 2000s. And I had this really high maintenance, high dollar customer. They paid me a lot of money, but they required a lot of time. And so I didn't mind it. I mean, if people pay their bill, I'm happy to deal with that.
Sure.
But I got sick, right? And I never really get sick. Mm-hmm. But when I was sick, I was feeling like dog sick.
Yeah.
And I'm lying in bed and this high maintenance guy calls me. And I was like, hey, you know what? Can I just call you back? I'm really not feeling well. And he blasted right through that request and went right into the request or his question. And he did not care two shits that I was not feeling well. I was thinking, you know, I offer my services because I genuinely care about people. Mm-hmm. And I really don't ever get to see that they don't really reciprocate that care back to me.
Yeah.
But this dude showed me that all the money in the world, mm-hmm. right, matters nothing. Yep. So I from that point on, I won't take money on, take anybody on unless they care about me. If they would put me first, because I'm going to put you first, and it's got to be a reciprocal thing.
Yeah. It's the adage that I've counseled a lot of people, like, well, you know, my job, my boss. And I'm like, here's the deal. If you die, your job will be posted before your obituary.
Yep.
Like next, you quit today, they will have people interviewing in the next 24 to 48 hours.
That's it.
Like your job is as loyal to you in that way. And you hate to take it to that space, but when you have a good place that does care for you, it's different. You know, just recently, you know, we've had a couple of deaths at the church. I've had to do some funerals. And one of the young guys lost his young wife, little 18-month-old son, sad. His company that he had worked for I think like 2 weeks, he changed jobs, got sick with COVID, got better, went back to work. His wife got horribly ill, turned for the worse, and then passes. The owner of the company is a regional company, so he got hired by like a middle-level manager, never met the owner. When they heard that his wife passed, he had no bereavement. He hadn't even been there 90 days. Like he's a couple weeks into this. The owner of the company called him and offered condolences, and I believe flew in and saw him.
No kidding.
Which I was like, what company is this and how can I use them? And paid him bereavement even though he didn't have it. And I'm like, that sort of space. Everybody goes, man, I want, you know, everybody says, I want to work for a company like that. Like, how cool is that? I'm like, I'll take my money. Like, you know, what do you guys do? And how can I use you? You know, when you hear stories like that, but for every one of those, there's
right
the other side where people are, well, you know, we're just going to fire everybody. We don't like this. And it gets stereotyped. You know, but when you look at that, you have to set up the healthy boundaries for you, for your family. You know, for your life.
Yeah. And like you said, as an entrepreneur, that whole time I'm thinking like, if I don't answer this call, I lose business. And I cared about that. After that day, didn't care. Like you go away and there's another person that'll be, because people are hungry for people to care about them.
Yeah.
Right. And if that's what I do for a living, then you're just taking up somebody else's spot.
Yeah. It's the same thing with church. Like, yeah, we have staff and we have volunteers. But I think about it 24/7. Like I'm thinking, well, how do we do this? And how do we navigate that? And yeah, people will make calls and people will care for people and they'll do stuff in their purview, but nobody's thinking about it the way the CEO is thinking about it, you're just not, you don't care about it. And to some extent they shouldn't, that's not their passion. They're there because of a paycheck. They're there because that's their passion that's driving them. Where for you, it's the concept, it's the idea, it's the brand, it's all of those things, and it oozes out of you.
Right.
And I feel very much the same way with what I do with church. Like everything oozes out of me to make this awesome. And sometimes it's frustrating because I'm like, I'm not even dealing with paid employees. 99% of the people I'm dealing with are volunteers. And yeah, they're going to show up and some of them are like, well, you know, I'll do this, but you know, I'm going to fiddle on my phone. I'm going to kind of mail it in. And it's like, well, you know, can't fire them. I mean, I can, but then I'm going to have to, you know, run sound or run the other thing. And so you start looking at some of those things. It's like, all right, well, how do you motivate people that aren't motivated by paycheck? We talked about this a little bit a couple episodes ago. But I think that's the challenge when you're driven like a CEO, like an entrepreneur, it's the thing it's constantly in there. And so, well, no, he's not going to do it because it's not between 9 to 5 and he gets a paycheck and he just doesn't care like that. Well, this is it for me. Like, this is all I want to, you know, so yeah, I'm going to take that call and yeah, I'm going to go the extra mile and yeah, I'm going to do those things. But at some level, I have to be willing to say, you know what, while this is important, this is more important. Jesus actually said to his own followers, they got upset because a woman broke this very expensive perfume and put it all over his feet. And So one disciple, Judas, was like, we could have sold that and given all the money to the poor. And Jesus is like, you're always going to have the poor with you. You won't always have me with you. There's a whole teaching there about worship and giving. But this woman doted on Jesus. And she said, look, she's preparing me for my burial and my death. And they didn't understand all what he was saying prophetically. There's a lot there. But his point was, there's always going to be another need. There's always going to be another phone call. There's always going to be another customer. There's always going to be another complaint. There's always going to be another thing. So at some level, we have to be able to put it down and rest. And God builds that into creation, right?
Yeah.
6 days you will work, seventh day you will not. We see that throughout scripture, that kind of rhythm, 6 on, 1 off. And you work hard, but he even tells us in the command for the Sabbath that we're not even to think about work. It's really hard. Like it's not just don't work. Your servants can't work. Your company shouldn't work. Like you need to drop everything. And you know what? You don't even negotiate business on that day because you need to set it all down. And it's like, well, my work's not complete, but you're supposed to treat it as if it's completed so that you can rest. And as you know, you can go away on vacation, but your mind will still be back here at Youngstown Studio doing stuff unless you treat your work as if it's done.
Yeah, and a politician will just change the name work to something else and then call it, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But if I ever see you in the cereal, I'm not even locking eyes with you. Not at all.
You know, it's fun. It's funny because for me, because I'm so people driven, if I'm with my wife, I'll be like, oh, there's so-and-so. She'd be like, do not go down that aisle. And I'm like, I'm just going to go say hi for a minute because I'm driven by that. Like, that's exciting for me. And she's like, yeah, but she's seeing this is going to be a 35-minute conversation. I've got milk and eggs in the cart and we need to go home. The kids are cranky. You know, my brain is like, people, you know, and she's like, don't go down that aisle. So sometimes I put myself in that position. So I can't say that it's always everyone else's fault, but I do recognize, you know, you have to be able to separate the two. So
I couldn't even tell you what the summary of this show is, but I do feel better having listened to your prophecies. And I feel like I got some guidance in your words.
Yeah. I mean, I just felt like we were supposed to come in and talk about you and talk about what was going on. And that's why I asked
you. You're a cool friend. I like you. Hey. I'm keeping you around.
I like you too. So, well, thanks for listening. We have no idea what the show was about, but we hope it was encouraging for you.
I don't know.
Yeah, something about purpose and destiny. And yeah, it was good. We'll see you Thursday.
100% to this show on Youngstown Studio. If you like our programming, we invite you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow our Facebook page, or subscribe to your favorite podcast platform like iTunes or Spotify. This is original Youngstown content, and we would appreciate you sharing the videos and the word about us. Thank you.